This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report, and it's the 15th day of August, 2009. Joining me on the line today from Australia is Greg Nicoletos of the website WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com. Greg, it's an honor to have you on the program today. Thank you for joining
me. Much appreciated. Thanks for having me on, James.
All right. Well, why don't we start by just hearing a little bit about yourself and the website and what kind of information you have up on there?
The actual movement started in concept probably about 2001, which was when actually the time when VeriChip started testing the markets, so actually starting to showcase that there will actually be a human implantable microchip being released. So myself, coming from an IT background, looked at and started following the actual company itself, and as a result, when the first microchipping was, you know, actually occurred in human beings, we waited for a backlash, really, coming from civil libertarians or from the churches or, you know, from people basically just seeing this as being an assault on human rights. So to cut a long story short, no one else was doing it, and that's how the actual movement was born. It started off as a smaller movement, obviously just myself and someone else, and now it's got to a point where we've got very good traction. We've got some of the best information regarding the human inventorying side of things. But more than that, how it actually all comes together and really a global agenda at play, which, you know, covers so many converging trends from, you know, biometrics to human inventorying to just total control, basically, of the internet as well.
Absolutely, and we've touched on all of those subjects on the Corbett Report before, so I'm sure my listeners will be at least somewhat familiar with this information. But why don't we start by going through some of the technologies that have come along even in the last few years that I think a lot of people still think it sounds very science fiction-ish, but science fiction is right now and we're living through it. So why don't you go through some of the technologies that are coming out now in terms of human inventorying?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the VeriChip, when it was first released, was basically seen as really crude RFID. For the listeners, it's really a glass-encapsulated RFID microchip. So in terms of its actual miniaturization, it's a very good, how the technology has actually progressed. I mean, when you look at it from a technological point of view, you go, wow, you know, mankind has achieved a lot. But the actual application of the actual product, I mean, the fact that it can actually be hacked, it's got there's good details now in regards to how it actually can induce tumours in people. Even though the technology can be seen as a marvel, the question we must ask is, should it actually be implanted into human beings when realistically there's other options out there? How the field is all progressing across the board, I mean, as mentioned, with the converging trends, you've got now nanotech is really out of control. You have got DNA sequencing is coming down in costs. You've got radio frequency ID, which is obviously on the march. And to the listeners out there, that's what VeriChip is obviously based on, is a radio frequency ID chip, which is basically red with an actual portable scanner. So similar to when you actually take your pet, your pet to the actual to the vet. Realistically, it is the same company behind the actual microchip. The only difference is the pet gets 9 digits, the human actually gets 16. So the application itself has basically come from a company called Destron Fearing, who was involved in animal implantations, you know, starting about 1987. And the technology has really passed down the line through some bigger companies, with currently right now Raytheon, who's the fifth largest defense manufacturer, actually manufacturing the VeriChip for VeriChip. And then delving deeper into the closet, you've got IBM, who basically provided the seed funding to VeriChip in 1999. And that is one thing that they obviously want to keep quiet, because when you actually look at IBM's aspirations, which is to really build a global information grid, even to the layperson, if you actually saw what IBM is proposing with, you know, their comment being building a smarter planet, which is really building a totally controlled and enslaved planet utilizing, you know, the technology they have. If you couple that with a human implantable RFID chip, you know, on the in the actual IBM inventory list, you'd think to yourself, you know, that this is out of control. So that's why they actually hide the alliance between the companies.
Absolutely, and it's an alliance that you've uncovered, and one that's disturbing for a number of reasons, including IBM's historical use of this type of technology, or at least the forerunner to this type of technology, which you've uncovered and put in a very effective video, which was, I think, how I originally found your website. So why don't you tell people a little bit about that history of IBM?
Okay, what it comes down to, what I find, it's almost comical. I mean, the company that really forged an alliance with the Nazi regime was IBM. So you actually had IBM was actually founded in about 1896 by a German inventor actually called Hermann Hollerith. Now, the business that IBM had back then was really they were a census data company. So census data was their actual business. They went on to then develop, which was called the Hollerith machine, which you can really see that as a tabulating machine, similar to really one of the first modern-day computers. That's the way you would look at it. So when Nazi Germany basically aligned itself with IBM, the capacity to actually take a census more from a head count and actually move it into a racial census, and you could actually then also categorized by occupation and also going back in lineage as well, was the way Hitler was able to actually collate information relating to the populace. So, you know, gypsies, homosexuals, obviously the Jews and other non-compliant races were easily targeted simply because data processing that the IBM Hollerith machine allowed just made Hitler's job more powerful. So what people need to realize is the company now that has the census data contract for America is IBM. Now, nothing has changed. That's the whole, you know, where you just shake your head and you think to yourself, you know, is man ever going to learn? It's as obvious as the nose on people's faces. It's the same game being played, you know, 40, 50 years later.
Exactly, that's the case. And I think people are maybe fooled because they look at something like the Hollerith machine and see, I guess, a really primitive forerunner to our modern database technology. And maybe it's difficult to understand how important that was back 50 years ago, 60 years ago. But that technology was, of course, one of the first things it was used for, was trying to collate data on citizens to try to come up with these racial ancestries, and that ties into eugenics.
Correct.
And the Nazi regime.
And I mean, what people also need to understand is how powerful, I mean, what Hitler basically achieved back then was they managed to achieve a horse census, so where they actually catalogued all the animals, recording horses, mules. There was a cow census that was actually achieved in 1940. And more than that, when they were actually looking to actually document and allocate where resources were, they were fully aware that, you know, that butter at the time was obviously a major commodity and a major resource. Now, with the butter census that was actually done, it was actually found that the Danes were basically, you know, hoarding large amounts of butter. So when you start putting it into those terms and you see what was actually possible with the Hollerith machine back in World War II, and now you've got machines that can basically form, you know, or compute, you know, trillions of computations basically in a short space of time, and with Moore's law being in place where, you know, technology is obviously duplicating every 18 months, maybe not by speed anymore, but definitely by capacity. And then you have IBM basically stating to us that, look, we are reverse engineering the human brain. We are building the global brain. And when you start going down those paths, the mind absolutely boggles as to what the actual end game is.
It certainly does, and we've talked a little bit about the specific technologies that are involved in this, but let's step back and look at that bigger picture. So from your research and your analysis, what do you think is the bigger picture? Where is this type of technology taking us?
What it comes down to is, I'll go back one step. You've got realistically what's going to be the forerunner to this all actually being implemented is radio frequency ID. So you have got one organisation which is basically called the Auto ID Centre. Now, they were an MIT, funded organisation, whatever you want to call it, which obviously worked with, I think it was about 103 different companies. So you've got some of the major companies working with them, like Gillette, Procter & Gamble, and the barcode people as well, the Uniform Code Council. So the idea came to actually build what's called the Internet of Things. Now, what the Internet of Things is basically this vision that the Auto ID Center has, is that every product in the world is basically given an electronic product code. So it's actually called the EPC. So it is the next step to the actual barcode. So when you start looking at the reasons behind that, it is to really globally mesh every single product in the world onto the internet. And what makes it more concerning is that they've actually allocated a certain amount of digits for human beings. So when, you know, the Auto ID Center says, look, you know, we're building an internet of things, the objects that they're speaking about include human beings.
That's chilling indeed, and I guess what we're talking about is the creation of a system that will one day truly be a totality of information of all of the things that are taking place across the planet in real time that will be accessible by the people at the top.
Exactly, and I'll give you a real example that's actually happening now. So what my research has come to believe, and, you know, it's provable out there, I mean, currently what's happening is the agendas are moving so fast that, for example, on our actual website, we do about 20 news items per day. Realistically, James, I can't even keep up at the pace that everything is evolving. It's in hyperdrive. I'll give you a classic example. There's an actual project called the eSense Project, which is an EU-funded project. Now, they have about 370 projects right now on the go. And they have really taken the mantle from DARPA for some of the... You know how DARPA will come up with some crazy concepts and say, look, what we want to do is build a cyborg that can run 1 million kilometres an hour. Just ridiculous concepts. And people don't actually realise that when DARPA actually seeds the money out to these corporations, and generally it'll go to, places like MIT, which are really fronts. When you start actually looking at where the seed funding is coming from, it's, as a general rule of thumb, it's always coming from the military-industrial complex. It's coming from big banking entities, basically, that are, you know, whether it's the Carnegie's, Rothschild, or what, you know, you can get into that side of things. But where the technology is really held, it is realistically by the military-industrial complex. So to go back to what the eSense project really is, it is to actually move, it is to move your emotions and your feelings to the web. So the concept behind it is, as we are moving into, you know, the world of Facebook and the world of MySpace and everything like that, and everyone is sharing data with the actual, I'll call it the machine, the next stage is now to start developing sensors, and a sensor is basically something that can be embedded into, you know, the structure of architecture, or your iPhone, for example, has got three sensors, like an accelerometer, an infrared detector, things like that. So the next stage for that is to be able to actually emote your feelings and your emotions over the web. That is what they're actually working. So you'd say, how would that actually work? Because you said, okay, well, Greg basically went away for a holiday. He went fishing. I get back into my Facebook, and I say, this is how I felt while I was on my fishing excursion. And those feelings are transferred over the web So other people can actually pick that up and sense it through the evolving technology that we're going to be having, which will be like intermeshed intelligent clothing, you name it. It's all coming out.
Well, it sounds like what you're talking about is ultimately the ideal of transhumanism, which will be eventually to merge man and machine into some sort of hybrid, which is really neither. So where yep. is this headed, do you think?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, the we've actually been recognized by Professor Hugo, who's basically from, I think it's Hugo de Harris off the top of my head, and he's actually recognized our movement as the first organized, they call us Terrans. And what a Terran is a group of people that basically resist the concept of actually building artificial intelligence. And by artificial intelligence, or they call it strong AI, it's building intelligence that far succeeds human intelligence. Now, what you have, I actually come from the IT field. I've worked for Apple and for Xerox. You've got a group of you know, very bright people that are all compartmentalized, and I utilize the you know, the sensor or the eSense project in from the EU as an example. You've got, let's say, 20 great minds working on one particular project, 20 great minds working on another project, and half those people, I'd probably say 90% of them, would have no concept of what their piece of the puzzle that they're building is, what is actually being built at the end result. So, you know, even with IBM building the big brain, at the end of the day, if you actually spoke to those people and you said, look, do you even realize that IBM was actually involved in war crimes? Most of the IBM employees would either not know it or they would basically deny it. But going back to the actual transhumanism, I don't think I've seen a movement that is based on more, what's a nice way to say it, on just pure fallacy and pure hype to propose this, you know, utopian world that we're heading into where man will basically merge with, you know, emerging technologies, and let's say you've got basically, you know, microchips in the brain that let you access information faster and the like. Because the one area that they keep dodging is the fact that if this technology becomes available, and it will have to come from the military-industrial complex. So the question then becomes is, will companies like Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, working with DARPA, give, let's say, Greg Nicoletis, myself, the capacity to put a chip in my mind that will let me become superhuman, where I can basically compute a million times faster than, you know, the smartest human being? It's totally logical what they're proposing, but the real drive behind it is, you do have a group of you know, transhumanists. I'd call them, they consider themselves elites, and we do have Google in the mix as well, IBM, which is really, I'd say, if you had to ask them honestly and you could actually get a straight answer from them, it would be a case of they want to transcend and basically eliminate the average person out there who will not transcend. So how I view the transhumanist movement, it is realistically, it's a religion. It is a religion that worships artificial intelligence, and it is a religion that is really trying to build gods in machines. And I use the word God with a small g.
Well, I think you point out a number of important points there, and one of them is that a lot of people in their critique of this unfolding biometric control grid tend to point to things like the ability for RFID to be hacked by outsiders or something of the sort. But I think, to me, the more troubling aspect is the idea that when you take this type of technology, when it starts to be incorporated into your life and eventually into your body, you're really placing your trust in the corporations and the military and the government that is actually creating these technologies, to be doing so in a wonderful utopian, you know, way to
that's exactly. And those are the questions, James, that they will not answer. Even Kevin Warwick, who he's basically the first cyborg, and I've got real issues with the gentleman just on a not only on a level which we don't agree, but at the end of the day, how he goes into market presenting transhumanism, he actually states, he goes, we should give rights to robots. He states things like humans are a subspecies that basically, you know, need to not be eradicated, but the next logical step is to be a cyborg. And if a cyborg chooses to be one, well, why would he want to talk to a lower life form like a cow? So these are the people that are representing transhumanism. Now, there is, on the other flip side, you've got great guys like Ray Kurzweil, who has got, you know, a lot of credibility in the field. I'd consider him an absolute genius in his work. He's got patents in different fields. But the one question the transhumanists keep dodging is, let's be realistic, human beings haven't been able to even distribute food equally on this world, right? Are we meant to believe that Lockheed Martin will produce, you know, 1 billion microchips so we can all become cyborgs, so we can all move and run faster like the $6 million man wouldn't build much these days anyway. But if we built a $6 billion man, I mean, what's the probability of everyone having access to that technology? It won't happen. It absolutely won't happen. And they know it. But what they're hoping, that they'll be part of the elite, they'll be hopefully embraced by IBM, DARPA, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and these people will then basically move to the next level and transcend humanity. And then that becomes the question of, why is IBM involved on things like, it's called Project Checkmate, which is basically working with the swine flu and with the CDC and the World Health Organizations. Why they're mapping the genome with the National Geographic to actually have access to people's DNA. Why they're studying that they can reverse engineer the genome to actually tailor map vaccines to your particular DNA. It's so obvious that there is a movement of eugenics, and it's always in the name of basically curing cancer, curing multiple sclerosis, and, you know, solving all the world's problems. It's just, it just gets frustrating.
Yes, it is frustrating, but I think something that people are picking up on is that there are underlying fears about this type of technology, which a lot of people do have, a lot of people are very concerned about it, are proving true whenever they start to look into this information and they find out, for example, that transhumanism was first coined by Julian Huxley, and they look into the Huxley eugenics connection and all of this. And every path you take from this information always leads back to eugenics-driven elite who are always trying to control technologies and hoard them for themselves. So people aren't really buying into this agenda, I think. And you've seen that in recent years with the Verichip agenda, seemingly, at least from my perspective, it seems to have stalled in the last few years. And it seems that they're moving away from
it. It has, absolutely. And I'll tell you, we're at one point, which is roughly, I'd probably say 6 months to a year. No, I'd say about a year ago. Verichip was really on the decline, and it was almost as though we went, look, we've done our job, you know. And out of the blue, there was an alliance with a company called Receptors out there. Now, what Receptors basically brings to the table is a Verichip, and this is what I say to people is, in the beginning, when Verichip was first released, as mentioned, it was a crude RFID. It was basically, you know, most people just said, what could this possibly evolve into? Now, where it's evolving into, you've basically got soon a glucose sensoring platform within the actual Verichip, which will open it up to the diabetic market. So if you could imagine, the diabetic market obviously pricks itself, you know, every day on its fingers to actually collect, you know, blood samples. What the Verichip will actually allow, or the glucose sensoring Verichip, will basically allow the recipient to have the Verichip in them and then basically scan themselves to register the blood glucose levels in the blood. So when that product is actually released, that is when the cash cow of Verichip begins. And then from there on, the next release is the pathogen sensor, which can basically detect swine flu, E. coli, you know, different bacteria, you name it. They basically can create a platform that can, you know, be the guardian against any biological threat out there. So when you actually start looking at how VeriChip got their FDA approval with, you know, Tommy Thompson working with the Bush administration and then basically leaving, firstly approving VeriChip, then leaving to the board of VeriChip, being given, you know, stock options of over 160,000 VeriChip shares, everyone knows how business is done in America with the lobbyists and so forth. So when you do have the VeriChip, you know, glucose censoring unit being released with the swine flu VeriChip solution, it would really take one to two deals between, you know, World Health Organization or, you know, world governments to basically make it the solution for what everyone sees as just media-driven hype in regards to the swine flu. But this is the time that we see that people need to actually start working towards getting preventative legislation put into place, because 5 years from now, this agenda that we're trying to put into place of just, you know, stonewalling, microchipping, or at least where legislation has to actually be overturned, is the best approach to go down. So getting back to your question, James, yes, VeriChip, you know, it had a shocking run in the beginning, it had a good run, it had a shocking run, and then all of a sudden there's more fought in the dog.
Absolutely. And in fact, I wasn't aware of that new implementation of the VeriChip that you just talked about, but that is very disturbing, because it strikes me that there are potentially very valuable and very helpful uses to this type of technology. But of course, that will always be used as the thin wedge of the edge, the way to get your foot in the door to implement these technologies on a wider scale for a different agenda.
Exactly. And look, you know, with Obamacare that's currently coming out, so realistically what they're trying to do is they're trying to digitize everyone's health records, right? So what you're finding is even Eric Schmidt from Google was basically petitioning, you know, the government, saying, you know, where's our chunk of the change, where's our chunk of the, you know, of the funds or that is currently coming from government. So the point behind this is, Microsoft Health Vault has actually approved VeriChip as a device that is a Health Vault product. So for the listeners out there, you really have two major players that are really contesting for, you know, electronic records of your health, and that's Google Health and Health Vault from Microsoft. The problem is, it's really the devil's in the details, that realistically that both have the same agendas when you start looking at you know, the global agenda. You'll always have basically Google behind it, Microsoft not far behind, and even though they obviously compete for the same territory, their goals and their agendas are still the same. So going back to Google Health, imagine you manage to get people's records online, and then coupled with IBM on information streaming that is coming from sensors and the like, these companies can then basically start building a profile of you, for example, where Google will then start pitching ads based on you being, you know, having a particular illness. And then we can start building databases of people that might be extremely ill, that might need to have specific vaccines. So where this digital world is heading, it is heading towards, on one hand, they're saying, look what we can do for you, but on the other hand, there's basically a blade ready to decapitate you. And like you mentioned, you've got, on one hand, you've got, if there were ethical companies, if there exist in the corporate world who are actually, you know, driving this technology, look, I come from, as mentioned, from, you know, a technological background. I think technology is marvelous, but unfortunately, the technology that really can empower can also really enslave.
It certainly can, and it has been used that way time and time again throughout history, so I'm not sure why people would think it would be any different this time. So I guess I'm looking at what would be the alternative to this, or how do we fight back against it? And I noticed that the tagline on WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com is home of the original substrate humans. So talk a little bit about that concept.
Okay, what is a mostly original substrate human will be someone who basically takes upgrades, someone who embraces invasive technology. So you could call somebody with a very chip a mostly original substrate human. What we're trying to do with the movement is basically solidify what it actually means to be human. And to me, what it means to be human is I have emotions, I have free will, I have things that cannot be made into a machine, cannot be duplicated by a machine, regardless of what sort of artificial intelligence they want to build. And I put a value on human life. And that is realistically where this fight is going. There has to be a global movement that rises up that says nanotechnology has to basically have more constraints on how we actually utilize this technology. Radio frequency ID has to have more preventative measures put into place before we start embedding radio frequency ID chips into all phones, for example, by 2010, which is what they're planning. So what the original substrate human movement is, which is a Terran movement, we're basically stating we do not want the transhumanists to build Artilex. We want open debate and an honest debate on how this could possibly work. So a lot of what, as mentioned, of what the transhumanists basically pitch is really this utopian society that you can piece apart logically in no time, and everyone knows that, but they keep pushing that same agenda of, we're accelerating as human beings, technology is accelerating, and just because it's accelerating, it means we should embrace it. Now, going back one step as well, the Department of Homeland Security, for example, issued what was a document for what was considered, it was called the right-wing extremist document, I think it was, and Neo-Luddites, which is really our movement, were classified as a terrorist threat. Now, how they actually classify that is if a group of individuals basically do not embrace technology, well, you're considered then a Neo-Luddite, you're preventing progress, and obviously you're a terror threat. Now, what the Neo-Luddite movement is, it's kind of based on the Luddite movement, which was a movement in British times of, I think it was 1811 to about 1812, where the textile workers started revolting against machinery that was starting to displace them. So where a measure of cloth would have taken 4 days to actually make, a machine could actually make that in a day or half a day. So what the Luddites actually realised is they went, look, these machines are displacing us. Let's solidify as a movement. And they basically started writing. They started destroying the machines. And for us to be considered Neo-Luddites, I embrace the term wholeheartedly because the war that we are waging now is far more important than, obviously, the textile, wars that were fought in 1811 to 1812. And if we can rise that sort of passion that the original Luddites had when, you have companies out there that really want to microchip you, your family, control you as inventory, I'm proud to be called a Neo-Luddite.
Absolutely. Well, for all of those listeners out there who are similarly proud to be called a Neo-Luddite, maybe you can tell them a little bit more about your website and how they can help join the movement.
Yeah, absolutely. We're actually releasing a new video next week. So the website is wethepeoplewillnotbechipped.com. We also operate from noverychipinside.com and then, covering the Christian demographic out there, markofthebeast.tv. The movie that we actually will be releasing next week is called IBM and Verichip, One Mainframe to Rule Them All. And the news that we really cover is, even though obviously we're conspiracy factualists, I don't use the word theory, there's no theory anymore, we primarily cover technology like biometrics, showcasing how the agendas at play basically do involve world databases, showcasing who's actually winning contracts, showing how technology is starting to merge, and ultimately just letting the end user make up his own mind. We're not one of those websites or movements that basically say, this is how it is, we're right, you're wrong. What we do is just present the facts, and it'd be very hard not to stitch it together like we do anyway.
Well, my hats are off to you and to your excellent website for helping to get the word out about these extremely important issues. So I certainly hope we can have you back on in the future to talk about this. But are there any final words that you'd like to leave my listeners with?
Yeah, another thing as well, which I'd like to touch on, is so people are aware, there's a project called Humabio that is currently and another EU-funded project, and what that has actually said, it's let the cat out of the bag. It has basically stated that biometrics can be faked. So what people need to realise now is when governments start saying to them, we need to move to a biometric identification card, what people need to do is start quoting what Humabio is basically stating, is that, look, biometrics can be faked. And the reason Humabio is actually stating that is because they're moving towards the holy grail of biometrics, which is brain scanning, right, so they can actually get an image of your brain or a scan of your brain and a scan of your actual heart, so the heart rhythm. So they're moving beyond external biometrics and moving to bimodal internal characteristics of yourself. So how the biometric trainers actually move, 10 years ago we were told iris scans were bulletproof, then you have to match your iris, and all of a sudden iris scans have to be matched to fingerprints. Fingerprints have to be matched to gait on how you actually walk, and then to odour, and then, and it never ends. And then where it was heading, I was thinking, where is this all heading? Where is this all heading? And then all of a sudden, there you have. You have basically organisations now that are putting strong funding into brain scanning. So that will be the next step, which is basically unobtrusive scanning of yourself. And the question then becomes, where are the civil libertarian lawyers out there and the ACLU putting strong cases forward of we are basically having our identity stolen by government? So identity theft is at large, and it is happening right now by your government. That's I guess, the final point I'd like to clarify, James.
All right. Well, it is important to know that the noose of the control grid is cinching around our neck, but we have to. That's why we have to put in place the laws that will hopefully stop them from pulling the lever and letting us go. So certainly, I think your site is valuable, and I hope people will visit WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com to get more information and hopefully join the movement. Greg Nicoletos, it's been a pleasure having you on today. Thank you very much for joining me on the Corbett
Report. Fantastic, James. Loved every moment.